Welcome to the Eye Candy Duo podcast with me, Naomi Williams, a 30-something parent of none, baffled by how much is undiscussed in the world of pregnancy and parenthood. I'll be asking the questions you want the answers to on this podcast, which is brought to you by Eye Candy World, makers of beautifully British pushchairs for parents across the globe. We're delighted to be joined on the Eye Candy Duo podcast by sports pundit and former rugby union player David Flatman. After representing England 8 times and playing club rugby for Saracens and Bath, David is now retired from the sport, but there is certainly no time to put his feet up. David is dad to an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old and has a baby on the way, so we caught up with him to chat about the new chapter ahead. Thank you so much for coming on to the Eye Candy Duo podcast, David. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm just enjoying a coffee, a lunchtime coffee. It's lunchtime where I am now in my time zone. And it's the first fuel, in inverted commas, I've taken today because I am, as my mum used to say, I'm on a diet again. but I'm not really. I'm just trying to eat less food because my jeans don't fit.
Do you know, I'm in exactly the same place as you. Don't get me wrong, I am so excited with the easing of lockdown and all the rest of it. But I do get this kind of pit of the stomach panic every time we get closer and closer to being sort of out in the big wide world. Because I'm like, when is this diet actually going to happen? Because like I know from next week, it's like, right, okay. So we've now got X amount of time. And the diet gets more and more extreme. But
that's
still
it.
Doesn't happen.
That's it. I mean, and you know, now things are getting sociable now. So yeah. I don't know how I'm going to, look, our dilemmas might be slightly different. I'm thinking, how do I stay below 20 stone in 2021? That's what I'm doing. That's my aim. I'm naturally quite a big chap. So I hover, if I don't eat, I'm about 19 stone. If I do eat, I'm about 21. Right. So I need to just, from a rugby background, I've spent, most of my adult life and a lot of my teenage years trying to put on as much mass as possible. And the truth is, I basically can't get rid of it. So I just want my jeans. I don't want to have to undo my jeans when I'm driving down the motorway because they're a bit tight. That's all I'm going for.
No, do you know, I like that as a humble goal. That's all we want in life. Yeah. I have to say, I do quite like your keeping under 20 stone. Flip it. Make the diet with a slightly different dynamic.
Okay. I mean, and, you know, in 2022, I'll try and stay below 21 stones. So I'm always 1 year behind. I feel like I'm in front.
Yeah.
I mean, I did go to the doctors a couple of years ago just for something else. And I said, while I'm here, can I have a check and sort of an MOT? And he said, you can't have those, mate. You can't just have an MOT on the NHS. They cost money. And I said, what if I told you I was having dizzy spells and whatever? He said, here we go. Right, we'll run a few tests. And he said, everything's fine. Your cholesterol's fine. I said, I'm 20 stone eight and I'm 6 foot tall. He said, yeah, you're absolutely fine. This is the size you're meant to be. Oh God. Really?
But in the same breath, can I get that like on my answer phone? Can I get that written down and signed by? doctor said I'm perfect. Yeah. What can I say?
Before this pod, I was on a call to a tailor. I live in Bath and to a tailor in Bristol about having some jeans made. And it sounds ridiculous, but I mean, I can't buy a pair of jeans. I spend loads of money on a pair of Diesels or Replays or whatever. I have to have them tailored because for my waist and my thigh and my calf size, I should be 6 foot 12. And it's like, in the end, he's like, let me make you some. So I'm talking about now, I'm not a rich man. I'm talking about spending 250 quid on a pair of jeans, which would be the only jeans that ever fit me in my life. So it's like, this is insane. So anyway, this is not what this podcast is about.
Do you know but hilariously, I'm loving how this conversation has got so much legs.
Yeah.
Dare I say, no pun intended.
That's it, yeah.
Do you know what? I feel your pain though, going to have to bespoke jeans. It's just like, jeans are workwear. That feels left field. But do you know what? Just to get back on track, I mean, David, I feel your pain with all of this, but also you are, you know, congratulations. You're expecting a baby.
I am. I'm pregnant.
You're pregnant. That's why the jeans won't fit, you know, but congratulations.
We are. My girlfriend and I are expecting a baby and I am 41, with two children from my former, my first marriage. I am on extremely good terms with my ex-wife. We're in great terms. That's worked really, really well. And we both met new people relatively quickly, and she won't have any more children. I said I just wasn't keen, and I just didn't fancy it. To be honest, partly laziness. I thought it's too hard. I don't want to do it again. I've done it. And also partly because I didn't know, I don't see how I can love another child as much as I love my two girls. I just don't see how that's possible. And I didn't. And then I kind of had a moment a year or so ago, and I just said, I would love to have a baby with you. What do you reckon? And she said, oh my God, I've been waiting for you to ask, type stuff.
That's amazing.
And, you know, cause she didn't want to pressure me into it because I had to and all that kind of stuff. And, it's wonderful. So yeah, we're expecting a little girl in September, and the children are doing lists of names every day, every night. They are obsessed. Last night I put them to bed at about 9:15, and at 10:15 I snuck upstairs because I heard the little gits still talking, and they were just talking about baby stuff and who's going to do what nights and who's going to get up and help me and help mummy and daddy and all that sort of stuff, and the babies and who's going to do shifts and what names. And
that's,
you know,
incredible. That must have been such a sense of relief that the girls have taken it so well.
Oh, the reveal, like, I mean, my little brother has Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, and he has something called a Robertson translocation, which is, I won't bore you, but I'm a carrier of that, whatever you call it, those genetics. So I've passed that on to, that there's a high possibility of me, or a possibility of me having a child like my brother. Now, we adore my brother, but being completely frank, he's 36 now, he's lived with my parents every day of his life. They adore him. He's the center of our family. He's an absolute legend. We just worship him and always have. And we always felt really lucky to have him. And my mum's life, as she knew it, ended 36 years ago. And she has been effectively a full-time carer for nearly 4 decades. And it's incredibly difficult, but she has never, ever, ever complained. They just adore him, and he has the most amazing life. But that means that we have loads of checks and loads of scans and horrible little procedures and invasive procedures to make sure that our baby isn't like my brother, and with the greatest respect and love to him. And he doesn't listen to podcasts, don't worry. He doesn't know I'm saying it. But we didn't find out till about 20 weeks or 18 weeks or something that we were genetically all clear. So the kids kind of knew, really, and they were badgering the whole time. And in the end, we told them, and I filmed it because it's kind of what you do these days. I didn't put it on Instagram or anything, but just for posterity. And they both just burst into tears, grabbed hold of my girlfriend and me, and just were crying with happiness and just over the moon. And when you are a parent who has divorced relatively recently, and then you have a new partner and you're having another baby, it is incredibly important. Well, if they aren't keen and they feel marginalized, ostracized, they feel second best, whatever, they feel inferior, that would crush me. It would absolutely crush me. So I have been very, very keen to make it their baby as well as ours. And they are just over the moon. And luckily, my ex-wife is a great person, and she's not a baby. So she doesn't do what a lot of people do, men and women do in these situations, which is just say nasty things about their ex for the sake of it and alienate the children. She is absolutely full on keen for the girls to love this baby. This is their sister. She absolutely wants them to love my girlfriend. I want them to love her boyfriend, because they live with them half the time, you know? So it's kind of, the whole dynamic is sort of coming together quite well, because it's not just two people fall in love and have a baby. There's all this stuff that went before for me, and that makes it, you know, that gives you a huge amount more to think about, actually. But luckily my children just adore my girlfriend, and she adores them. She really loves them. And it's, you know, it's so far so good, put it that way.
That's amazing. Because I have to say, I mean, I speak to a lot of people on the podcast, and actually a lot of the time, I've learned a huge amount from various different conversations. But actually, we recently, just to end on season one, we had a child psychologist in. And it's interesting about how obvious, I mean, it sounds obvious, but in the same vein, when you hear it said like this, that children are a reflection of their environments. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you, like you said, it's incredibly fortunate that you and your ex-partner have such a good, solid friendship, you know, and that you do still really respect each other and you wish the best for each other, you know, moving forward. Because obviously you can see that being reflected in your two girls. You know, they would have learnt that off you guys. So well yeah. done, David and your ex-partner. No, but, you know, they would only have known that from, like, living from the example of you two. So yeah, that's wonderful to see.
You can virtue signal all you like, and you can say the right stuff all you like. And in the, you know, these days with social media being so rampant, and I think it's a largely synthetic age that we're living in. There's so much balls going around the place. There's kind of like people virtue signaling and people being incredibly emotional and passionate about things they're not actually thinking about as they close their eyes at night. They just want people to think they're heavily invested in great causes and great things. I think it dilutes the people who actually do the good stuff, actually, but that's a separate subject. But as it happens, my dad's a child psychologist. My sister is a child psychologist. and while they're obviously, they're wonderful people and they're very bright and very useful to talk to in these situations, I think a lot of it actually has been, this will sound really arrogant when I say it, it's actually been me that's driven it. My ex-wife as well, but in terms of my behavior, I haven't been following instructions from my psychologist's father. It's me who's done it, and I've made it that way along with my ex-wife, and we have made it work like that. And it's not because I'm the world's best person, so I want to qualify that arrogance. It's not that. It's because the most terrifying thing that's ever happened in my life was the thought that I was going to ruin my daughter's lives by divorcing them from their mummy. And that is what caused me to be incredibly ill a few years ago. It made me really ill. It gave me, I look back and I realize I was having panic attacks. I was all over the place. I lost 4 stone in weight in about 4 months or 5 months. I didn't eat for days at a time. Really, solely based around, I knew to a point, I'm being glib now, I knew to a point that my ex-wife would be absolutely fine. I think, you know, there was a level of apathy there, really. Not no anger, no hostility, but I thought, am I ruining my children's lives? This is their blueprint for relationships that I'm creating. And I think a lot of my great behavior, and it hasn't all been great, but a lot of it has been driven by a fear of ruining their futures, actually. So I've probably thought about it more than I needed to. But actually I thought, where is the win in being horrible to their mummy? Where's the win in that? You know, it makes me feel rubbish, her feel rubbish, the kids see it. We've just been lovely to each other and accommodating, and we've taken care of each other really. So in a difficult time. So our kids have seen that, and hopefully, you know, my divorce and my ex-wife doesn't ruin their romantic futures. That's what I think about, really.
Because you're kind of building a new, well, it's like what a lot of people call sort of blended families. It's kind of like a new term.
Yeah.
Where you can, you know, even some celebrities, they're seen sort of going on holidays with each other, with their new partners. It's just an extended family kind of connection, really. And I think that's a lovely thing, as you're kind of already thinking that way. Do you think you're sort of potentially, like you sort of mentioned it earlier, but maybe some part of the apprehension of being a new dad again was sort of inherently built on this basis of like not wanting to kind of like ruin, that's a really weird word choice on my behalf, but like you said, like ruin your kind of children's futures. You know, maybe it was, you know, because you don't want to do anything against them, like sort of as a father trying to be selfless. Is that kind of part of the apprehension of being a new dad?
Yeah, I think one of the fears around having, just being completely honest, the main fears around having a baby is how hard it is. And another fear is that it marginalizes my daughters, even for a millisecond in the next decade, you know, would be a millisecond too many. And that would be agonizing. I'm a pretty relaxed bloke, really, but that would be agonizing to me. And I think I would find that very, very difficult if I thought I was doing that. So I've had long conversations with my girlfriend and I've said, look, there are going to be times when there is a baby screaming in the house and it's a bit crap and my girls are here and they're not enjoying being here. And I desperately want them to enjoy being at daddy's, you know, and, you know, I don't want them to see it as actually a bit of a pain in the backside being at daddy's and they don't get any attention because of this baby. And there might be times when I just have to leave you for an hour with a crying baby and just take the girls out to get a sandwich or go for a walk or take the dog out or something and just be with them so that they are not all consumed by the hard bits of new baby. Because I don't want them to, privately say to mummy, oh, we don't want to go to daddy's. All they do, all it's just baby crying all the time. And we never get to do anything and we can't hear the telly because the baby's crying, you know, they're only little. So they don't know that that's unreasonable. So my, you know, I've sort of sought clearance from my girlfriend to just occasionally, I've said, I will make up the time. I promise I'm not going to leave you in the lurch and use that as an excuse, but there might be times when I just need to take care of them and disappear. And it will just be for half an hour or an hour. You know, so it's something I think about a lot, probably too much. Cause when you get there, you're just in the trenches, aren't you, for the first 6 months. So it's kind of, you just find a way through it. But also, you know, my girls are with me probably about 3 days a week, something like that. And my ex-wife and I don't have a custody agreement in our divorce. We're just we just sort each other out and help each other out and whatever works. And it works better that way. But you know, equally, I've got probably, you know, 4 nights a week without the kids here with the baby. So that it's not like I've got all three to deal with plus an exhausted girlfriend all the time. So actually, I think there will be a lot of time when it's just the three of us, which will make things easier.
Because it's been, I mean, your youngest is about 9 years old.
Nine, yeah.
Yeah, nine. So, I mean, the last time you were in this place 9 years ago, you know, maybe things, you know, things have changed. I mean, you're retired now. 9 years ago, what did life look like for you? Were you kind of obviously very busy with your career or, you know, is it sort of slightly different for you this time around?
Yeah, I want it to be different. For our first baby, who's 11 now, I was a professional rugby player and I wasn't only a pro, I was a sort of a senior pro. By that, I mean, I was getting on a bit and I was struggling to keep up. My body was struggling to keep up. I was worried whether I was going to get another contract and because I kept getting injured and kept getting hurt. And, you know, my ex-wife actually said, you know, you can be noble if you want and do that stuff, but what is the point? I'm not going to work. I've stopped working. So what is the point in both of us being written off every day? So she solely breastfed for 6 months with the first one. And I think maybe even longer with the second one. So every feed was her. And she said, I don't want to do formula. I want to breastfeed. She liked that. So it was actually, what's the point in you getting up in the night? If she wants to feed, what are you going to do? And I've actually got a friend who, believe it or not, he gets up with his wife. When she breastfeeds, he gets up with her and sits with her every night. Wow. And she doesn't need him to, but he thinks he's doing the right thing and sharing the load. All that means is he can't do anything. He's just sitting there with his hand on her leg or holding her hand while she's breastfeeding 2 or 3 times a night. Been doing it for months. Yeah. And they're just broken every day, both of them. Mm. So she wants to have a nap during the day and he can't. He's already asleep because he's been up all night. It's ridiculous. So we had an agreement suggested by my ex-wife, you know, you don't do the nights. Don't do the nights because I'll do those. You've got a job to maintain. You're sort of paying the mortgage, as it were. But I think I leveraged that too much. And I think I used that as an excuse to do too little, actually. And I regret that. I do regret that. And I think I'm still I'm not the perfect daddy, but I'm a really good one. And my favorite thing in my life is being a daddy. But I actually think it took me a couple of years to get to that point. And I think the reason it took me a couple of years is because I didn't invest enough in it at the start. I thought, well, I'm a pro athlete. I need my rest. I need to do what I need to do. I've been conditioned to be selfish. So it's all right. Everything I want to do is all right. And I regret that. And my ex-wife took, you know, did more than I think her fair share of, you know, she kind of didn't do everything she would say she did, but of course she didn't. I mean, I was in the building, but she did so much more than me in those early years. And I really regret that. So I want to do more this time, and I want to help out my girlfriend because it's the right thing to do. And I know that it helps her and it helps the baby and it helps me and it helps the bond and all that stuff. But I think if you don't, people say they've got, everyone loves to say, have you got any regrets in life? Nah, no regrets. You know, I live a no regrets lifestyle. A nice one. Is there anything you'd do differently if you did it again? Yeah. Well, that qualifies as a regret for me. You don't have to cry yourself to sleep about it. But for me, I regret, I would do it differently and I intend to do it differently this time around. So for me, that qualifies as a life regret, actually. And, you know, I've acknowledged that to my ex-wife a few times and it's all fine and everything, everyone's happy, but I intend to be more involved, put it that way.
Yeah, because I think it's actually quite an advantage point that, you know, because also you, like David 9 years ago, is going to be just generally a different man now. And it's because of all that experience that you've had that you can have that sort of retrospection and go, okay, if I was going to give myself this advice, or even if you were going to give a friend some advice, it's just like, you know, like you say, just be a little bit more present at the start, you know.
Yeah, and do you know, this is about babies and parenthood and that sort of stuff, this pod. I know that, and I'm... I read Dolly Alderton's book a while ago, Ghost, and I absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. One of my favorite books ever. And she talks about something called acute mentionitis, which is when someone's got something going on in their life and it's all they can talk about and it's unbelievably annoying. So I think I've got divorce acute mentionitis, but it just, because it ties in so closely with the parenthood thing for me, it's a big part of it. I kind of almost keep, but I do think that, you know, I've been through some major things in my life like everyone has. I think divorce has taught me more about being a good person than anything else in my life. It has weirdly been very, very, very difficult, even though it was amicable pretty much the whole way through, and still is. It has taught me so much. If you're willing to be introspective and you're willing to, you know, be aggressively balanced about things and force yourself to see things from someone else's point of view when situations like this are hard, I think you can learn so much. I saw every day for about 2 years how it could go pear-shaped and how I could react to something or she could react to something. And if you just, it's made me such a better dad, like infinitely better at being a dad, being divorced. And it shouldn't have to come to that. That's my point. It should. You know, it should come before you get to that point. It didn't last time, but it will this time.
Do you think your career choice as being a sportsman, because you're not the first person, I have to say, that I've spoken to that have dedicated their lives to sport, and the inherent selfishness that you have to take, you know, like the hours you have to put in, the focus you have to give, obviously comes with a huge sacrifice, you know, that you have to kind of like miss out on certain things and, you know, really focus on that. Do you think almost your job choice inherently maybe gave you one focus, and now obviously, you know, you're retired, and with the divorce it's kind of changed your mindset from how it was before?
Do you know, yes and no. I think physically you have to be selfish as an athlete. You have to take care of your body. I mean, I wasn't the most professional to be honest with you, but you have to take care of it. So you miss weddings, you miss parties, you miss lash-ups, you miss stag do's, you know. But my job now is commentating on sport, and so I think the biggest issue is that my weekends, I work at weekends. So, you know, when everyone else is available, I'm gone again. And that's been the way since I was 18. It's always been that way since I played. And now I'm still going to matches every weekend, right? Except last weekend, it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Whereas when I was playing, it was only Saturday, only one of those days. So in a sense, it can be harder now. I think I can go out for dinner and have a few beers, and I can stay up, I can get up through the night and do all that stuff now without, you know, fatigue being an injury risk. But I still, my career just happened, and my ex-wife didn't mind really that I just wasn't there that much at weekends. But I look back and think that's pretty tough for her. And, you know, my girlfriend now is like, you know, we're going to have a baby and you're going to be gone every weekend when I want to relax and socialize with you. And I said, correct. That is. And it wasn't like, deal with it, mate. It was like, that is what I do. That's who I am. You know, what I do is at weekends. And equally, I'm here loads during the week. And if you're not at work, which you won't be for a while, I'll be with you 5 days a week and often 6 days a week, which is a lot more than other parents, frankly, other fathers, frankly. So my work is very flexible. I'll have a huge amount of time at home compared to my mates that work for insurance companies and banks and all that. But you know, let's let's book a weekend away. Well, I'm afraid we can't. So we're trying to book a summer holiday at the moment. And I said, I'm afraid there isn't any time. So there isn't one. So she wants a mini break. I said, sorry, there is not a weekend. Here's my diary. Find a weekend between now and September when we can go. There isn't one. There is not one. So that's that. And what do you do about it? I mean, this is what I do. I'm 41. I'm not just going to start commuting at 5:30 on the 5:30 train to London and begin a career in finance. My career is in sport. It gives me a great lifestyle, but there are drawbacks, you know? So oddly, I'm kind of involuntarily selfish now. So it's still happening, which I feel guilty about.
No, but you know, it's the nature of the kind of the business, isn't it? But like you say, you actually have possibly more available days now, but they're just not necessarily the most convenient.
I have more time at home than 90% of men in the UK, you know. So it's almost, in a sense, it's like what you're moaning about. But it's like, well, whenever our friends get together, I'm going on my own. I said, yeah, that is true, and that's rubbish. But it's what I do, you know. It's who I am. I love my job, and it's not like, do you want the big house or not, love? It's nothing to do with that. It's like, this is, she loves how much I love my job. She's you know, she is in love with my passion for my job. She adores it. Equally, there are drawbacks. That's all. And everyone has those. I've got lots of mates who work in the city, and they don't see their children until Saturday. I mean, they genuinely do not see their children until Saturday, you know, when they're young. So if the kids are going to bed before 7:30 at night, I've got one mate who I won't name him because I've always named him before and he didn't like it. But he said he basically didn't see his children Monday to Friday until they were 3 or 4 years old. I mean, never saw them during the week, never went to their school, never worked in a big bank, no days off, never went to their school, you know. So it could be
worse.
That's
a known thing for, I think, for a lot of people, a lot of people listening as well, that will know the kind of the realities of, you know, bringing up children today and keeping your heads above water, regardless of what you do and how you do it.
I made my kids breakfast this morning, got the lazy little gits out of bed, made them breakfast, forced one of them to wash her hair because it looked like it had been dipped in chip fat. cleaned and ironed all their uniform. Didn't iron it. Washed and dried all their uniform, got them dressed, got them to school, made them, you know, lovely breakfast and all that. And I'd been to the gym, go to the shops, do a bit of laundry, which I don't do enough of apparently. And all that stuff is happening all day today, and I'll pick one of them up at 4, one of them up at 5. I've got hot dogs lined up for tonight. I've got a movie lined up, you know, and we've got a baby scan in the morning at 8, which means I drop the kids off early at my ex-wife's house, already ready to go. They can walk to school, you know. So this is just, it's a standard weekly program, you know, that I'm doing the same. I'm flying around trying to get everything done. But my job is me smiling on telly, so it just looks gravy and what a life. But actually, the days I'm at home, I'm dad. You know, just like mum is a mum, it's exactly the same. You know, I'm sort of doing all that business and realising that my girlfriend's coming home from work tonight and I haven't done any of the washing up from last night's dinner, so I'm just looking across the kitchen now. So I better get that did.
You're on a time limit.
Yeah, I am. She'll judge me on that, and she's right.
I have to say, because my husband's actually freelance, and he used to love it when I used to come back from the office because he knew he had a certain time to get certain things done by. And now I'm at home, he's like, oh God, you could see the truth that I do X, Y, and Z during this time and all this kind of stuff. But
I watch Netflix during the day and I refuse to be judged. Yeah.
I'm like, are you doing anything today? But I mean, how have your friends taken it? So, you know, any friends, you know, that have recently had, you know, newborns and stuff, have you gone to them for some advice? Because it's been 9 years, but, you know, it's not a huge amount has changed. But like you say, like social media is a lot more prevalent now and stuff like that. I mean, any kind of great pearls of advice you've got from some of your mates that have become new parents recently?
Here's one from a friend of mine, lovely bloke, amazing dad, believe it or not, when I tell you this. He's got a similar gap and he's got a 2-year-old now. And he said, mate, don't do it. It's when I said we might have a baby. If you have a baby, yes, might do. And he said, don't do it, mate. He said, honestly, I love him so much, but I absolutely hate my life. I have no time. He's always ill. I hate my life. The weekends are the worst days of all, and they're meant to be the best. I hate my life. It's awful. I hate my life. Don't do it. Christ. And I said, by the way, this is the same phone call. By the way, we're expecting. And he just burst into hysterical laughter. He's like, oh my God, you idiot, don't do it. He was genuine, don't do it. I love him, I love him. Please don't do it. For me, don't do it. And so I rang another mate after that to tell him, and he was just like over the moon, and all these flowers arrived, and he's like, I'm so pleased. We've got a big gap between 3 and 4, and it's the best thing we ever did. Oh, I'm so happy for you. The girls are going to love it. So contrasting reactions, put it that way.
I was going to say, I mean, hats off to the friend that, I mean, go to him for some, like, well, I was going to say honest advice, but I mean, Lord, that's quite the... the feedback.
Yeah, brutal.
Even
yeah,
when
I mean, he's maintained that the whole way through. Equally, he is the most, I won't say his name, he is the most amazing dad. Like, full on, hands on, does the lot all the time. He's amazing, but he's just like, he is happy to be, he's, you know, he hates having to be so selfless, but he does it with no visible resentment. So,
yeah. Oh, I mean, so. I can't believe, actually, we've got Zoom's going to kick us out in about 5 minutes. So just to kind of
sorry, I talk a lot.
No, as do I. Honestly, this it's been wonderful having a chat with you about it, actually, because it's such a kind of I don't know. I don't think there's a lot out there when it talks to about new families from a divorce, and also on a dad's perspective. I don't think sometimes these things get spoken about enough, even when, like you say, with your mate, you know, be it whatever advice, I think our listeners will get a lot out of this, just to kind of hear a really honest other side of you.
Yeah, do you know, I was chatting with a mate this morning who's having his third baby soon as well, very, very similar gaps and all that. And he's in the armed forces, and they've got a brilliant system where you can take up to 6 months paternity leave.
Wow.
You sort of pay it back at the end kind of thing, but so you can't take the mickey, but you can have, and I've got another mate who works for Diageo, the big drinks firm, and he gets 6 months paternity and all that stuff. And I'm freelance. There's no paternity here. Like, just like there was no grants or benefits or anything during COVID, you just deleted, mate, and you get what you get, and that's fine. But I think it rightly, the vast majority of concern is directed towards new mums, rightly. However, I think that, I don't think men are ignored, but I think more and more men's voices are being heard, and it's a challenging time for daddies as well. You know, it's also very difficult for us. But as soon as you say that, it's almost like, you know, we're seeking sympathy, and I don't think we are. I'm not seeking any sympathy at all. In fact, I want to do better because I feel like I didn't deserve any sympathy first time around. But I think I'm sort of preparing for it to be wonderful, but difficult, actually, and difficult for a quite a long period, because I'm frankly not used to being that selfless. And what I've needed to do has generally taken priority, not because I'm an alpha horrible git, but it's like, if I'm commentating on a rugby game, it kicks off at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. I can't push that back for an hour, mate. I've got to be there. So it's live telly that is happening. Whereas you can put emails off, you can put the odd Zoom call off. You can't put off a kickoff on live telly. So where I have to be is where I have to be. So there's some adjustments coming, but I'm actually really looking forward to it.
That's fantastic. And David, thank you so much for coming on. I've so enjoyed chatting and listening to you this afternoon. But just to end, and just to give a heads up, we've got 3 minutes. But yeah. What are you most looking forward to come September when your daughter turns up?
I'm actually most looking forward to my existing daughters, getting to know their and showing love to their new little sister. That's the most important. That's the biggest thing for me, to be honest. My girlfriend was just born to be a mum. She was just incredibly maternal. Children love her. She loves children. I can't wait to see her move from the exhausted phase to the sort of glowing phase where you can really appreciate what you've got. I can't wait for that. Just watching her beam, because I know she will just love it. She's obsessed with babies and children, so it's just perfect for her. I'm looking forward to actually the stage when they start giving something back, just being completely honest. And I'll do all the lovely stuff before that. But when you start getting smiles and a bit of movement and a tiny little bit of independence of movement and thought, they're the bits I'm looking forward to the most.
Oh, fantastic. Well, look, all the best, and we can't wait to see the little lady when she arrives in September.
Thanks, Naomi, very much.
Wonderful. Well, look, thank you so much, David, and have a lovely day running around after your girls, by the sound of it. Getting on top of that washing. And take care, and thanks so much.
Thanks, Naomi. Thank you very much. Bye.
To find out more information about the topics covered in today's podcast, head to the iCandy blog page on www.icandyworld.com/blog. You can also catch up on season 1, featuring thought-provoking and engaging interviews from a mix of industry leaders, experts, celebrity parents, and healthcare specialists, all via your preferred podcast provider. If you enjoyed today's episode, then don't forget to leave a review and hit like and subscribe to ensure you never miss an episode. iCandy is a proud supporter of Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital charity. Every day brings new challenges at GOSH, and this extraordinary hospital depends on charitable support to give seriously ill children the best chance to fulfil their potential. A donation from as little as £10 could pay for a genetic test that will help diagnose sick children, whilst only £50 could cover the cost of one night stay for parents in GOSH's family accommodation. Every little bit helps support both children and parents alike in making a challenging time as comfortable as possible. If you'd like to make a donation, please head to discover.icandyworld.com/gosh.